Welcome to the Intriguing Beings podcast, Season 3, Episode 5, with Titouan Galea. Hi everyone, another one of my episodes recorded in Mexico, which I'm pushing out today. There's actually a couple being released today because we've got a few bits going on with the magazines being published, so I needed to get these out the door, and also they've been sitting on my desk for far too long, and there's just so much stuff that I need to get done at the moment. This little chat with Titu, obviously many of you will know he's a world champion in wing foil and has recently moved from F1 to Cabrina, so we talk a little bit about that, but also get quite a nice interesting backstory on where he came from, how he got into kiteboarding and where he's going in the future. Anyway, I really hope you enjoy the episode. Without much further waffle from me, let's get right into it. Today I'm sat down with a very talented young man by the name of Titouan Galea. He is from New Caledonia, originally a kite surfer who was into foil racing, I believe, a little bit. And then when wing sports came along, he totally embraced that, which was an interesting angle to take because a lot of young people weren't really interested, but Titouan embraced it 100% and has won the world title a couple of times, I think.
Three times.
So yeah, three times world champion for wing foiling, which is a hell of an accolade, especially because mostly windsurfers are pretty good at the freestyle tricks because they're so talented with that from windsurfing, whereas winging's really quite a different sport from kiteboarding. So I thought it'd be fun to get Titouan on today, have a chat with him, find out what makes him tick. So you grew up in New Caledonia, right? How did you get into water sports over there?
Hey Ru, so yeah, thank you for having me on your podcast. Yeah, I'm originally from New Caledonia. I'm born there in 97 and I've been raised pretty much my whole time there till I was 18. But I actually learned kitesurfing in Mauritius because I have a part of my family there. That's why I'm going there also often. And so I was there in 2006, 2007. I was at school there. My dad moved there for some job offer. He was a professional diver back in the day. And so we moved there for 2 years and I learned there in Kite Lagoon in Limon. So yeah, that's where I start into kitesurfing.
Yeah, and then kite racing is quite a specific discipline and also quite a competitive one. How did you get into the kind of foiling and that kind of side of the sport?
Beside kitesurfing, I always liked to race.
Yeah.
So, even before kitesurfing, I was doing Optimist.
Okay, so dinghy racing, yeah.
So, I was racing on that, since I was, 4 or 5, maybe.
Yeah.
And then after, I started doing a hobby cat.
Yeah.
Catamaran. I did, 2 world championship on this.
Oh, wow.
2010, 2014. China and Australia in the youth category and then open.
Yeah.
And
So you've always had that racing round a course and because it's quite an interesting thing. Like a lot of people who kite surf maybe have no experience of a racing regatta or, what that involves. And there's an awful lot more that happens perhaps off the course in terms of being ready on time, the timings about it. But also when you're on the course, the tactics are pretty, intense and you have to make a lot of decisions the right way. Did that translate easily to kite surfing and kite racing?
Yeah, for sure. In the beginning of kite surfing, not much people had experience or knowledge about racing. And for sure, I had more than most of them due to Optimist, but mainly Hobbycat before. And I transmit this experience to kite surfing and it worked well at the beginning. I started kite foiling in 2014, 2015.
Yeah.
Started competing 2016 till 2019.
Yeah.
It was 3 great years of kiteful racing around the world. And then it started also becoming Olympics and then wing came around. So it was a different story.
When you're into your kite racing, obviously, I know you've just recently switched sponsors, but you were riding F1 at the time. How did that come about in terms of getting sponsored by them? What was the story behind that?
So, I think that's a nice story. I don't come from such a, not a rich family for sure. I think my dad stopped, bought me kite when I was maybe 12. Yeah. And after I have to bought them. So I used to work a bit when I was young. And I bought my first foil. I was 17 or 18. I remember it was at Christmas. I worked and I had some money. And then I bought my first foil for very little price, kite foil. And then I did some local race in New Caledonia. I had no sponsors. I was racing with Vegas, for example, and on a kite foil. And I had one foil. And yeah, then I really liked it, so I wanted some more kite. So I bought like some other kites, a bit more race shape. And finally, yeah, I did some good results already locally, like national. I get some prize with some shops.
Yeah.
And I could buy one foil.
Yeah.
With a Tarawa sword back in the days. That was a reference.
Yeah, that was the race foil to have, right?
Yeah, in 2015 or 16. And then I went to France for French championship once from New Caledonia, just traveled once. That was already like a big trip for me, like it was a yearly trip. I get some help from my club, the government and stuff, but it was a big trip for me. And I went, and when I came back, I finished high school. And then the year after, in March 2016, I decided to move totally to France to be able to compete more
and
to be closer to every event.
There was a lot of European events for kite racing, wasn't there?
Yeah, so mainly. It's sort of place the to same be. Also a bit now in winging, but there's a lot. But yeah, it was even more kite falling. So I moved to France. And yeah, before this, like I worked for like 3 months. I did pizzeria, delivery, gardening, other stuff. And I don't know, like I get a bit of money, and also I used to met some people that were pretty close to F1 that introduced me to F1, and that was also a big change for me. So yeah, I got this money, I flew to France, I bought my first car that I still have because I don't need any others. I bought my first car. I was able to get some gear at a reduced price from F1, like, I don't know, cost price.
Yeah.
And so I bought 2 kites, and I had already the foil, and that's all I had. And I was sleeping in my car for more than a month and a half.
No way.
Or so, yeah. It was the end of the winter. It was a bit cold sometimes. I had my grandparents, but not near the sea, like it was 2 hours, so I was going some time to get some rest. Otherwise I was staying in my van. And I only had 2 kites, a 7 and 11, and then I was racing on locals competition. And F1 realized I didn't have much money, so they gave me like an old 18, and then I could sometime borrow a 15 from some club and stuff. So, and then I managed to do good result, like locally, like top 3, top 5 in France. So that was already good. And so, yeah, I arrived in March, and I remember around, we did some events all around Europe, like driving all the way down to Giseria in Italy for some race, and many in Europe. So not big cost, but, and I had the gear from a bit F1. So 18 and a bit some clubs was lending me some gear. But I did the event and I had some top 10 events in World Cups. So that was quite great. And then I remember in September, F1 realized I was a potential good rider. So they lent me full quiver.
Yeah.
I was like so stoked back in the days. Like I had like 6 brand new kites. I was like so exciting. And I continued doing some local event, and in November I had already a good result on the ranking for the world, like top 5 or top 6 probably. And there was one last event in Qatar in Doha, and they offered me the budget to go there because I could not offer that, so I flew there. That was one of the last events of the year, and I think I got like 5 or 4th overall in the year. So that was very good for the first year. And that was 2016. And then I did this And then for 2017, I could had a budget for the
Yeah.
year, pretty low at the beginning, but it was enough to make all the tour, and I was mainly living from prize money. Was sometime going back working with my grandparents. So yeah, it was nice years
Yeah.
traveling a bit in my van and stuff. And then yeah, 2018 got a bit bigger budget, a bit more prize money, good result. I got my best result on a kitefall. I think yeah, I got yeah third in the world. I was in Oman, and yeah, that was it. But I mean, I was not really like living from it, but
Yeah.
it was good. And then yeah, in 2019, as you know, yeah, wing foiling came along, and yeah, things changed.
Yeah. And how did that transition? It's really interesting to hear that, you didn't come from a rich parent background, because a lot of the pro riders, have a lot of financial support from their families and stuff, and it's always a little bit easier for them. So I didn't know that about you, that you'd been, working all these jobs to try and make ends meet so you could follow the dream and moved all the way to France. So that's really interesting. And I know Raf really well, and the guys at F1 pretty well. I've done quite a lot of trips with him. In fact, that's how we first met. But how was that transition to be, to being into racing? You've got to be quite dedicated. There's a lot of training that you've got to be doing. Like, you are on the water a lot. It must have been, was it quite difficult to see the sport of wing and go, okay, I'm going to take some time out of my training and time on the water, and I'm going to invest it in that new sport? Or was it something that you just saw and you thought it looked really good fun and you wanted to get involved?
Well, in the beginning, the first time, so I did wing foiling. I was in Montpellier. Raphael was testing like pretty much every day in a spot called Port-Camargue in France. And in 2019, I was already doing SUP downwind since
Yeah.
more than a year, and I was full on this, like excited about this. People are not excited about this today, but yeah, I was
Yeah.
doing this a couple of years ago already. And I was finishing one downwind, and I saw him. He was here trying this wing that was in March 2019. I said, "Hey, H2, try this out." And I went with my ACP board, and yeah, I tried. I did some few tack and stuff. I was like, okay, that's nice, but I don't see the point, like really. And I don't think it's gonna be a big market, whatever. And he was like, we never know. You cannot tell now." I said, okay. And then maybe yeah, 1 month after. I mean, he makes some better wings maybe, but I got invited, like, I don't know, to shoot, just to see it. I mean, locally, like for the Mondial du Vent event,
Yeah.
and then I realized, okay, I can do like downwinders with it, can be fun, we'll see, yeah, how it goes. And then I was, yeah, not thinking at all about it. I was, yeah, mainly kite foiling. I was, yeah, quite happy with kite foiling, but I don't know for how long I will do it anymore, anymore. And then what happened? Yeah, already in May, I had a good session in France. There was some waves, and I was already now yeah riding shorter boards. I was already on a 442, but still with big foil,
Yeah.
1400. And but there was some wave, and I had some fun, and I realized could be really nice. And then we went yeah together with Euro in Madagascar in June
Yeah.
2019, and it was really windy there. And on a small board, I was able to put like smaller foil, and then I realized, this thing is yeah could be great. And we had also some waves, and yeah, there I realized could
Yeah.
be something nice. And then yeah, little by little, I switched more and more into wing foiling. Like in September, October, we went to the dealer meeting in Le Mans in Mauritius. There was Manawa working. I mean, I went, and he was like really sick, and I really liked it. And I think right after Mauritius, I did my last kitefall event in China. Just yeah, because most of my friends were going there, and it was a nice event. But then after that, yeah, I stopped kitefalling totally. I mean,
Totally,
yeah, not
just
competing anymore in this, and
yeah.
I focused 100% on wing foiling. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that trip to Madagascar. It was kind of the first photo shoot they were doing for the Swing V1,
Sure.
which was one of the first, well, it was the first commercially available wing from F1 at the time. And yeah, I remember watching you guys, and I think I'd been wing foiling once at the Nash meeting just beforehand, like literally like one go on a big 140-liter board, like an 1800 foil, and a 4.2 wing. It wasn't quite enough wind, but I was doing it just going, I can't see the point
point in this. I was up on the foil, I was like, oh yeah, now that feels fun. Like you lose all the drag and suddenly you're flying and you're like, okay, I can see it. But I came downwind like a mile from where I started and had to walk all the way back. And I was like, I can't see this taking off. And I remember seeing you guys in Madagascar and it was like, oh, right, like this is pretty full on. And I think you were trying your first backflips there.
Yeah.
I had some photos of like trying to get upside down on it. But it's kind of funny to think, to having seen you try your first backflips to now seeing what the potential is with people doing.
Yeah,
like
that's crazy how it all
1080 spins and all sorts of really ridiculous tricks now.
Yeah, but it was the same. I mean, in the beginning, I was not trusting at it at all. But really, I have to admit, like, thanks to my old boss, like Rafael, he trusted in it a lot. And for sure, it helped me because I kind of had to do it because, like, he was not pushing, but he was making a lot of prototypes and really liking it. And yeah, I had maybe good gear in the beginning, and yeah, it helped me for sure.
Yeah, it's always it's a good opportunity as well, isn't it? Because kitesurfing started in like 2000. You know, you didn't start kite until 2006, so it's when a new sport comes along. If you can, you know, forge a little path for yourself right at the beginning, it's almost like a big head up on, you know, anyone else that's coming in 5-6 years down the line.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm pretty happy to have been part of it at the beginning of his sport,
being the right place at the right time. I remember with windsurfing, I was 7 when I started windsurfing, which was back in the 80s, and I was never good enough or never had enough time to really, you know, make it a career. I became a windsurfing instructor and traveled the world and did that, but in terms of being a professional or anything, I was nowhere near the right level. But then when kitesurfing came along, it was a similar thing. It was like, right, this sport's just started, no one's any good at it yet. If I get in now, then maybe I can make some opportunities for myself, which is, you know, why I've ended up running magazines and things like that. At what point did you see, like, you know, there's obviously different aspects of wing foiling. You've got the freestyle, you've got the wave riding, you've got just cruising around. You know, I saw you learning those first back rolls. At what point did the freestyle for you really kind of take off in terms of the tricks that you were doing and you're thinking, okay, we can have competitions doing this because there's enough tricks to compete?
Well, that was at the first competition in November or December 2020. That was in Fortaleza in Brazil. Yeah, 2 years ago. And Rafael asked me to go there. I went there. And at first, I didn't want to go. I was studying. I said, no, I have to study. I said, no, we have to be there. I said, okay, I'm going. And obviously, no one had competed yet in racing. And yeah, I went and I won the event. So he was stoked.
Yeah, happy days. And I guess the racing, you know, for anyone listening doesn't really understand, kite foil racing is pretty intense in terms of your skills on the foil, like your tacking, jibing, everything is done really, really fast, super high speeds, like your footwork has to be spot on. That must have been a big advantage switching over to the wing, like you already can do all
for
that
sure
stuff.
For sure, it helped me. Like now I'm really bad for sure at kite foiling, but sometimes I think like I should do more because it's so much harder and so much, yeah, you're going 30, 35 knots and you're doing jibing at 30 knots. We're not doing this yet in wing foiling.
Yeah.
And for sure, when you go on a wing and you go 25 knots and you have to jibe, then it's much easier, you know?
Yeah.
So, for sure. Like for kite foilers to switch to wing foil, I mean, as long as you get used to the wing, then it's so easy. Yeah.
Yeah. You've already got the foiling skills to sort of pick you up and
and
get you there. And obviously we're here in Mexico. You've just recently moved to Cabrina. How did that come about and what was the thinking behind that?
Well, I'll maybe not go to all the details, but I was with F1 for 7 years. It was really nice. Now the market is having a bit of a crisis, like it's a bit going down, and they wanted maybe to, like, I had a contract last year. They wanted maybe to reduce some contract from some riders, and I said I know I can have good other offers to other brand, because I still want to do the world tour this year and the year after maybe. And we have 10 to 13 stops this year, and obviously it costs a lot of money. And they offered me something that would not make me made me able to do all those stops. So I said, no, but I want to do it. So I will go to a brand that will give me the opportunity to do it. And also they didn't want me anymore to race.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, but I still want to do some events in race. I mean, they will not they will not support me to do it. So I said, yeah, but there's some brand that will support me for sure for racing, because that's what I was doing good last year. I still had a title last year on racing, and I know I can do good due to my experience in kitefall days. And so that's why I want to keep racing a bit, and I'm sure it's gonna become as big as freestyle. Well, I hope. I don't know how far I will go, but I know I can do good in this.
Yeah.
Easier than freestyle with all the kids now. But so yeah, that's how it arrived, and yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I've did 7 years with them. I think it's a nice journey. I think it's more than average of a rider to be in a brand. It was a really nice journey. We're in really good term, and we end up in good relation. And now I'm happy. I actually also feel more motivated to be in a new brand. I think it's like this for most of the rider to have to meet I mean, it's also nice. Like we were here at the dealer meeting. I used to meet so many new people. That was super nice. My new teammates and also the people that works in the brand, and that was really nice. And I feel more motivated to push myself a bit more for a couple more years.
Yeah. And you're sort of known as one of the best wing foilers on the planet. You must have had, you probably could have picked any brand you want to go and work with, but you chose Cabrina. What was the sort of, what was the tie up there?
Well, I don't know if I could have picked any brand, but I think, I could go to a few of them. And I was, with F1. They make kite, wing, boards, wetsuit with Monera. And I was really used to this. There's some rider that get them board in some brand, the wing in some other brand, foil another brand, and then wetsuit another brand. And I don't know, I never did this. And I guess it's more work, but I'm sure it has also more advantage. But I wanted to keep something that I was used to. So I wanted a brand that does it all.
Yeah.
So the choice were limited, and well, I don't know if I can go in all the details, but like some brand I will not go for certain reason. Maybe some have like too much a big team.
Yeah.
Some won't have the gear that I like.
Yeah.
And
because that's got to be a big thing, right? F1 were known for making really good gear, and
for sure,
Cabrina make fantastic gear, but you know, as a rider, it's not just about who's going to offer you the most money. You've got to spend every day, all day riding that kit, right? So you want to know that you're going to be on some good equipment.
Yeah, it's weird, huh? But I answered some comment the other day on Facebook, some topics, like people saying it was all about money. And I can tell you it's the truth. Like last year, I had offers that were almost double F1, but I didn't left because there's no... I was not trusting the brand. It's not all about money. I mean, for maybe some rider, but not for me. And it's not all about money. Like you have to trust the brand. There is the gear, the team, the people that work behind. So there's a few different things. And same for this year. I'm pretty sure if I will look for it, I could have maybe better offers to other brand. But then I won't have such good gear, or I won't have such a good team, or I won't have such a good support, or like with Cabrina, we're gonna develop some gear probably together, like to improve the range, and this maybe some brand won't let me do it. Like they know what they want, and they're never gonna ask a rider to help them, So there's a lot of different factors. And so the choice was kind of easy for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's been interesting this week to see, the amount of effort they're putting into the sport, and the amount of, behind the scenes, what they're putting in, both financially and in development, and you know where they're at. And it's quite exciting to see, you know, some of the products that have come out. What's your, I mean, I know you've only been on the products for a really short amount of time, but have you got a setup that you quite like already, or are you still sort of finding your way through the range?
Well, yeah, I haven't rode gear much, especially here, but I was on Maui last week and I've tried a couple of part of the gear, and not a heavy rider, and I will probably not use a code. That's a big board, but because it starts only at 60 liters for now, but I will mainly be on the links with really precise, 4.3, 4.5, 4.7. I might use this mostly. And about the foils, so they had before the H650, but it's, I like it. I've rode it a lot and it's really cool. And now we have the H700. That works also really good. And yeah, I haven't tried the oversize yet, but that's what I will use the most. And it's good. That's also one reason I chose Cabrina. Like I saw, they have three wings. So for sure they have different particularities. Like for sure some will be better for something and some for others. And that's exactly what happened. I never thought about it, but like, I realized maybe there's three wings, so the Mantis, the Normal and Apex Vision, and Vision. And I will use mostly the Mantis for jumping and probably racing. And the Vision, I realized it was better for some tricks. So, but I still have to train and figure out what's the best for what tricks, but for sure I will use pretty much the three of them.
Yeah, so. And I've already seen you chatting to Lars and, you know, some of the design team. It seems like you're sort of fitting right in and already helping in terms of like looking at the product and where things can be developed.
Yeah, for sure.
Stuff.
Well, I've always been interested in development in gear. Like that was also a big part of my job with F1, and that's going to be one with Cabrina today. And I know I always liked it since the beginning, and I think also due to my knowledge in kite falling when like it's Olympic now, so it reached a limit that we haven't reached yet in wing falling. So there's a lot of things that I can transmit from kite falling and help them to develop some gear, and so that's why I'm so close maybe to the R&D team already here at Cabrina, and I hope we're gonna make some good gear together.
Perfect. And you're known for the videos that you put out in terms of the really big wave riding videos, and that's one of the things that I kind of see. And for me, the sport of winging, I absolutely love it. I do it loads back at home and I really enjoy it. In certain conditions it works really well, and for wave riding it's amazing. I still think kite surfing in waves looks better because you get all the spray and it's like, you know, really aggressive, and the same for prone foiling and surfing. I think surfing looks better. However, when you released some of those videos with the really big waves at One Eye, that was the first time I kind of saw it and went, holy shit, like he's ripping and flying along that wave. And I'll put some links to some of these videos in the podcast so you can look at them. But I've not really seen anyone else doing anything like that. Was that always a sort of a focus for you to try and, you know, take the sport to a different level?
Well, I don't know if I want to take it to a different level, but I just really enjoy it. Yeah, this video was probably one of my best sessions last year. And it was big swell, not too windy, not crowded at all because it was too big for most of the people. Wing falling in wave, that's what I enjoy probably the most. What was the question already?
Well, just like, you know, it's impressive to see. I mean, you grew up, you know, in New Caledonia, but also spent a lot of time in Mauritius. And I know One Eye, it's a pretty scary place and very unforgiving. Yeah, yeah. Do you feel at home there because you've spent so much time there over the years?
Yeah. I spent a lot of time there. So, well, it's a bit, weird place because sadly they don't allow jet skis there.
Yeah.
And when it's that big, the channel kind of closed, so they cannot put the boat out. So if something happened, you have to swim back. So that's a bit the problem. And nothing happened yet, but I mean, except if I injure myself on the reef, I know if I end up there, I don't think I will die. Like, I know where to swim, but yeah, a few people disappear there actually, along the years.
It's maybe bad.
When I was there being young, like, I remember a friend of my dad disappear, and yeah, there's some crazy story there. It's so sad they don't allow the jet ski there. But yeah, it's a big,
yeah, it's kind of ridiculous, right? Yeah, they've been campaigning for it, and there's still the government's
But I mean, that's a big debate.
Yeah, big nightmare. They need the safety. And when you're riding those waves, what foil are you on? You must be on a pretty small foil in terms of size, because the speeds that you're traveling are just, you know, almost mind-boggling.
Yeah, 500.
Yeah, 100. super small.
Yeah, but well, that's what you need. That way you feel very confident and chill on it, you know?
Yeah.
If you have, I could never do it on a 700, impossible. Or that would be like very scary.
Yeah.
Really, really scary.
Because you just need that small speed for the speed and not so much lift, so that you can control.
Yeah, that's it.
The speeds that you're going at.
Yeah, you need a small foil when you go fast, yeah.
And have you got any plans this year for some more sessions like that?
Well, I really want to, but I will do it, whatever. But we have too much stop from my foot on the World Tour this year. There's 13 forecasts. There might be at least 10 confirmed, and that takes almost the whole year. Plus there's some other major events in France, like Defi Wing or whatever. But yeah, definitely want to go to some of the places. Maybe I will see, maybe I will not go to some events, just to go to some places to ride for myself and yeah, try to create nice content. I might go back to Mauritius because it's such an easy place that you just go there. I mean, now there's rebuilding the hotel, but yeah, before, I mean, when there's a hotel, you can sit in your hotel there and pump your wing out, and you just go in the water in front. And during the season, like per week, you can get like 2 or 3 days, like perfect on one eye on Manawa. So it's such an easy place to travel also from France. Like, it's just 10 hours. Mostly by night flights, so very easy to get there. And plus, yeah, I have friends and family there, so it makes things easier for me. So I might go back if I have a week and I saw a big focus. Okay, I know how to get there. I'm very used to it, so it's very easy to go. But I definitely also want to do some more things, obviously, to change and show people different things, and also want to go to different places and to it's always a new adventure to go to some more remote places and challenge a bit yourself. And so I want to go to Cloudbreak, which is near New Caledonia in Fiji, very close to where I am from. I always wanted to go. I was about to go this year, but they never had any big swell there this year. Well, they had one, but there was no wind, so you always need everything. And I was very close. I was in New Caledonia, but then, just rode in New Cal instead. We received exactly the same swells. And so, I want to get there. It's a very big, nice wave, I think. And I think it's a really good shape. I never rode, but looking at it, I think it could be a really nice shape for wing foiling. It's not as barreling like Tiupo, but it's still fast and heavy. So I think it can make some really cool content from it. And it's a left, I like it. So I'll try to reach this place when there's condition, if I have the time. And one other place I also would like to go is the south of Madagascar. I have a lot of friends that went there. And there's a couple of waves near an island called Anakao.
Yeah.
There's a wave called Flame Ball or Jelly Beans. There's a few lefts there. And during the season, June to September, it's blowing wind every day, every afternoon, and there's some nice wave normally. Receive the same swell than Mauritius, basically. And I want to get there because, I mean, it's not the biggest wave this time. I mean, can get quite big, but not as big as Cloudbreak or even One Eye. But it's just quite a remote place. It's a nice journey and expense, I heard, to get there. You need to get a few planes, couple boat trips, and very remote places. So I want to go there for also the experience. That's another place. And I don't know, a lot of friends also went to Indonesia, and I think I have to make my way there one day, mostly for kiting maybe, because it's a lot of paddling wave. But yeah, those are the three places I want to go. Yeah, if you have some variety, I'm definitely keen. But yeah, in yeah, that's my thought for maybe this year. So yeah, I'll see what can I do.
Yeah, I guess it's a case of you've got your schedule with the World Tour and then just see if any swell fits in between all the events that you've got to go to. I mean, it's nuts, like 13 events. It feels like with those World Tours, like the GKA and the GWA, it's just getting a bit crazy in terms of how many events they pump out. And they just seem to be like, oh, there's an event here, there's an event there, there's an event everywhere. And that's tough for the riders, right? Because if you want to win the title, you have to go to all of them pretty much.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, I think I will see how it goes. Like, there's a lot of events already in, like, in April, we're going to already head three. And yeah, I will see how is my ranking. And like, I don't know, in freestyle, if I get really, if I get like over five or whatever, like if I cannot reach the podium for the year, I don't think it's worth it to continue.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to discuss this also with my sponsor and everything. But for me, I think it's worth, it could worth more to make like some good videos like this and create some good content also for the brand. Than to maybe finishing a year and finish, I don't know, top 10, top 5, whatever. So we'll see. But yeah, racing, I hope I can still fight for the title or at least a podium. And this year they add wave disciplines also, wave title. So that's going to be interesting. It's always a bit hard on the judgment. Like some people are front side, some people are back side. On the foil, it's a bit, it's even, I think, more... not fair to judge compared to surfing or kitesurfing. Yeah, to choose a wing and everything. But and we're gonna have two events with where I will be backside. One in Cabo Verde, one in Darla. But yeah, I'll try to attend them. It's I like.
Yeah, that's wave. Kind of. It should, if they're gonna run a wave event, they should have equal backside, equal frontside events. It's fair on everyone. Whereas if you just have two events with two right-handers, then the goofy footers are kind of handicapped, and that's not really really fair. But I guess it's the first year they're running wave events, so maybe in the future it gets better.
There's not much place we can run wave and event with lefts actually. Because there's not much left in the world very close from the shore, like Ponta Preta or Darla, Morocco. So, yeah, like most of the lefts we mentioned together, like One Night, Cloudbreak, even Newcastle, they're quite
long
far
way,
offshore. So it's hard. They used to do it in Mauritius a long time ago, kiting, but they had to put like
a tower. And...
But they're not anymore allowed to do it. So. Yeah, it's a bit tough to run a wave event, but I think it's going to be really nice for the sport. Like, if one day we get an event in like decent wave, I think it's going to make more media coverage than any other event. Well, I hope so. We'll see. But I really don't know what people around the world like the most. But yeah, I guess it's like cruising and doing some small downwinders. But I don't know what they are looking the most at. But yeah.
I guess it depends, right? Some people are really into the freestyle. Yeah. For me, I look at the freestyle and I just think it looks a bit ungainly, like a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Because you have like a big heavy board, because they're trying to have a board that floats when they land straight away. So you're on like quite a big board and then you've got a big foil dangling around the bottom of it. And almost I think those moves look better or more impressive on a windsurfer than they do on the hydrofoil. And so for me, I really like the wave riding side of it. You know, but then someone else might be different and they really love the freestyle side of it. So it just depends on who's watching, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you think with the freestyle stuff, like you mentioned the young kids at the beginning, there's been a big change in kitesurfing where the young kids have come through, like Lorenzo and people like that, the older guys aren't doing so well. Do you think the sport of wing is going to go the same way where these young kids are just going to be taking over?
Well, you don't have to ask the question. It's already happening since already almost a year. Last year we had five events and three of them has been won, like three world title events, I'm saying, open events for everyone, and three of them has been won by 15 years old guy, Chris McDonald, Malo Genole and Xavi Cor from Spain. So that was impressive. I mean, there's not much sport where you see so much young riders at the top. But I mean, I think it's super nice as a sport, and so we'll see how this year goes. But I'm pretty sure they're gonna lead the thing. Yeah?
Yeah, do it again. I guess that's where it feels like in waves you need a bit more experience of understanding the wave and understanding how it works. And it's not something you don't see many young guys like dominating surf competitions and things like that.
Yeah.
And then same for racing, it's an experience thing, right? The more you more races you do, the better you get. That's straight up. That only way you get better at racing is by racing more and learning more, and every time it's different. Whereas with the like the big air for kiting and the freestyle, it just seems like it's who's got the balls and who bends and who perhaps doesn't care too much about their own safety.
Yeah, it's about caring, but we had was a discussion sometime with other riders, but maybe also having being light could help them, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, they're young; they don't care. They're for sure very talented, and they learn faster than me for sure. I did some next generation coaching with F1, and I can tell you they learn much faster than me. But also because maybe them lightness help them, I guess. I'm not sure, but yeah, could help them.
Yeah, I guess weight's always a factor in everything, right? If you have a 200-pound fat guy,
Well, there's one guy that is more than 200, and he's doing really good. It's Wesley Brito from Cabo Verde. He's more than 100 kilo, I think, and he's doing quite good actually.
As long as it's windy.
But those kids, they just like take off and fly like so easy. They fly a bit higher than us. They hang time a bit higher, longer.
Yeah.
And so they have more air time and they just flip easier. They land smoother. They do a bunch of things better than us, being heavier. So,
where's next for you, T2? We're leaving Mexico today. Where are you off to?
Well, as we said, I'm from New Caledonia. Not much people knows about it, but it's in between New Zealand and Australia. There's not much flights going there, so I'm not going there so often. And I really like to go there to be with a bit my family, my close friends, and it's my home, so I really feel good to be home sometime in time. Especially the last couple of years, I haven't been there so much. So I'm heading there. I'm going to do a stop in Tahiti because, as I said, like there's not much way to get there in Newcastle. You go only through Australia, through Japan, or through Tahiti. So Tahiti was even shorter, and this way I got to stop to some of my friends' place.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stop there 5 days, and then I go back to New Caledonia for like 2 weeks and a half. And then, I just took my ticket last night. 1st of March, I fly out to New Zealand for the first stop of the world at a championship. Yeah. So...
Yeah, and then you're on the world tour. On that crazy train going round and round and round.
We'll see. But then it starts. New Zealand, and then I took also my ticket like directly to Cabo Verde for the second event, and then directly to south of France, Montpellier, for the Mondial du Vent. And then I will stay a bit more in Europe during the summertime. I mean, I will be based there, and I hope to travel there to some places with good wave also, this summer. But next now, Tahiti and New Caledonia for the next 3 weeks.
Nice. Well, I hope you get some swell when you get there.
Yeah. Looks like there's a storm season now in New Cal, and we're going to get, there's a storm not passing over us, but near, and we might have good rare direction swell, and that could make work a very rare special wave. If it happened, I could make some great content there. I never done, but I'm already excited about it.
Fingers crossed it comes off. Yeah. So we might see that on YouTube shortly.
Yeah. We'll see.
Brilliant. All right, T2. Well, look, thank you very much for your time. I know you've got to get packing and get everything sorted before you leave. So thanks very much for chatting. It was really interesting, and I really appreciate it.
Nice. Yeah, that was nice to chat.
There we have it. I hope you enjoyed that one. Please don't forget to like, share and subscribe and give these a 5-star rating wherever you listen to them. I was actually out in France the other day and recorded a few more episodes, so just hang fire and we'll get those out to you as soon as possible. Anyway, have a fantastic week. You've been listening to me, Ru Chater, and the Intriguing Beings podcast.